Recording started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the BC Members Call on April 28, 2016. On the call today, we have Jay Sadowski, Angie Graves, Lawrence Oluwole-Roberts, Jensen Olufier, Jay Chapman, Chris Wilson, Steve Del Bianco, Paul Mitchell, Philip Corwin, Beth Allegretti, Andy Abrams, Barbara Warner, Alex Deacon, Marie Petullo, Denise Michelle, Olga Yaguas, Claudia Martinuzzi, Steve Coates, Cecilia Smith, Marta Capillo, Andrew Harris, Susan Kawaguchi, and Kevin Audrit, and Laura Covington. We have apologies from Tim Chen and Gabriella Slack. From staff, we have myself, Chantal Dirksen. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Chantal. Thanks, everyone, for taking the time to join us today. Per usual, we have a fairly full agenda, and so without further ado, perhaps why don't I let Steve turn it over to you for review of the policy calendar. And let me also just say, Steve, that the BC is heartened to have you back with us and certainly continue to keep you and your family in our thoughts and prayers. But we're glad that you're back engaged, and we look forward to working with you further. So, Steve, back over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris, and thanks to all of you for your condolences and good wishes. And, you know, in particular, Phil Corwin attended my son's memorial service, and it's really meant a lot to me to have the support of all of you, friends and business colleagues. I'll also apologize that I probably will get a lot of this wrong on today's policy calendar, since I pretty much missed the last 3 weeks of my life, and apologies for that. I'll catch up soon enough. First thing we'll take at the top of the policy calendar is the only recent comment that I was able to track is on April 23rd, we filed our comment on the geographic regions review. Thanks again to Andy Mack for leading that, several of the rest of you for contributing edits. Let me know now, though, are there other comments we submitted prior between the 18th of March and the 23rd of April that I've missed?
Steve, this is Chris. I don't believe so.
Great. So if any of you become aware of things that I have failed to track and put onto the business constituency website, just please let me know. And thanks again, Andy Mack, for taking care of that. Let me move to the four open public comments that are available now, and this won't take too long. The first is our comment on ICANN's draft op plan and budget for fiscal 2017. And great news is that we already have a draft. It was led by Jimson. There have been some plenty of help in trying to get it done. And what we'd like to do is try to understand whether the BC is going to need to put a significant discussion in on this. These comments close in just a few days on April the 30th. So this would be the time to record whether you want to add anything in specific. This is the first attachment to the policy calendar, which any of you can click on, the policy calendar, bring it up. It's only 2 pages long. And we have some specific observations and a request for increasing the supported traveler slots for public meetings. The business constituency requesting a small expansion to send the entire executive team to the ICANN public meetings. So, we have a total of 5 slots today at ICANN public meetings, but we have 2 elected counselors, use 2 of them, and then only 3 of the executive committee members who are going to carry most of the weight of the work. So I think it's an appropriate request. Are there any comments in the queue on additions and changes? I see Denise. Go ahead, Denise.
Hi. Just a couple of items, and I'll send some text today. I think it would be useful to underscore what I believe has been a general sort of past position in the BC, and that is asking for continued improvement in the budgeting, planning and budgeting process overall at ICANN, and in particular, the KPIs, key performance indicators, or sort of metrics, both an articulation of what the objectives are, essentially what they plan on doing with the money, and how they're measuring their and reporting on their success still needs to be improved. So I would suggest that that we include some text on that. In addition, again, I think connecting back to previous positions of the BC, I would also suggest some text calling for additional transparency. And I believe this ties in with some work of the CCWG on accountability, and that is a you know, a publication of all the sort of contractors and consultants that that ICANN uses, and in general, calling for more transparency in ICANN expenditures. Thank you,
Denise. This would fit under Category B, General Observations. Number one would be a good place to put transparency, and then I do believe B2 probably is better for transparency. B2. And then if you could add a paragraph on the key performance indicators or KPI, today being the 28th and the comments are due in 2 days, could you circulate those two paragraphs in the markup as soon as possible? And then I'll put out we'll make that last call for BC members. But let's try to get that in today. Do you think you'd be able to accommodate that?
Absolutely. I'll send it out today.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you, Denise. Any other comments? Jimson and the rest of you, thank you very much for drafting that together. And I know that you had help from Marilyn and Chris Chaplow, Angie, and Denise and Susan. Thank you. Second item on the policy calendar is country and territory names at the second level in a couple of new GTLDs, Dot Torre and Dot Pictet. These comments close in about 13 days. And for closed brand GTLDs, Dot Brand GTLDs, and thankfully, Andy Abrams has just circulated yesterday or the day before, circulated a draft on Torre and Pictet. I didn't have time to put that out to the rest of you. I was doing some things on the Hill yesterday. But I'll send those around immediately after today's call, and then we'll have the full 13 days to review. Andy, thank you again for pulling those together. And agreed, these are our steps where the BC is very concerned that ICANN staff's not really paying much attention to our requests. But thanks to Andy's efforts, it's relatively easy for us to reiterate our principled comment on giving flexibility for dot brands to release second-level geographical names. Any comments on that? Andy Abrams, thank you again. Number three, these are on GTLD safeguards to mitigate DNS abuse. And these comments close in about 15 days. It was just extended. There's been fantastic work by a number of BC members, and in particular, Angie Graves has led so much of this. Chris Wilson's worked on it, along with Denise Michelle and Andy Abrams, and even a few others I probably have missed. But that is the second attachment to today's policy calendar, the BC comment on safeguards to mitigate DNS abuse. So this would be an appropriate time to hear from any members who want to pitch in general ideas or offer to provide additional paragraphs. This is a relatively short comment, about 2 pages right now. And again, what we look at are the safeguards that were sort of developed in the 2013 framework, most of which came from the Government Advisory Committee, or GAC, safeguards advice, which was provided in Beijing. And it took a while, but many elements of that were eventually implemented, and most, but not all, had the support of the BC. The BC did not completely buy into the full set of GAC safeguards, so we want to be as supportive as we can be. But in this case, it's really a look back to see whether they've been effective. So any comments on the draft that was circulated as a second attachment? Okay, Denise, your hand's up. Go ahead.
Thanks. Just a point of clarification. This draft report can be a bit confusing, but so the whole purpose of it is to propose research and data gathering that will support the CCT review in its broad examination of DNS abuse safeguards in the new GTLDs. For those who haven't had a chance to read the report, although there was certainly very focused GAC effort called DNS Abuse Safeguards, when looking at potential for DNS abuse and activities and rules and protocols that help safeguard from that. It's actually quite a broad category and includes a whole host of activities that the community undertook during that long period of developing the applicant guidebook. So you'll see in the letter that we have a list of things like the 2013 RAA that included very specific requirements for the registrars, many of which really go directly to helping mitigate abuse. So I just wanted to, the draft report is written in sort of a confusing way. So I wanted to make sure people understood that the point of this paper is to sort of draw a box around what staff will be researching and collecting data on. And you know, Facebook's contention is that it should make sure that it draws the proper box and catches really all the key things that the community did over the course of several years to help with DNS abuse in GTLDs. Thanks.
Thank you, Denise. Let me also acknowledge the contributions of Chris Wilson and Olga Yaguez on this first draft as well. Are there other comments? Because I know that, Angie Grace, when you circulated the last draft a few days ago, it was in anticipation that the deadline was, well, 2 days ago. So given that we had the extension of time, there's an opportunity to enhance this. But there's no requirement that we do so. If there aren't any further comments, I will submit it, but I will wait until the deadline of May 13th to make sure that if anybody has a last-minute item. But let's take advantage of this time and not wait till the last minute if you want to add something to the draft comment. So with that, let me go to Angie Grace.
Hi, thank you, Steve. This is Angie. Just to add to Denise's comment, we really do want to help ICANN draw a box around what should be considered in determining, in measuring DNS abuse. So if there are other documents or source materials that we have not yet considered, I think Denise did an amazing job adding so many to the list of what we should consider, that would be a great place to contribute. So if you think of a document that exists that we could use to add to ICANN's scope of research or drawing the box a little bit bigger, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Angie, I'll note that on the first page of the draft comment that you and your colleagues have prepared, there is a list of items, and specifically we are asking ICANN to consider and incorporate abuse mitigation elements from all these different documents. Do we have an expectation that staff will then dive into those 15 different documents and do that work? Is that part of the plan that staff will do after this implementation report?
Yeah, this is Angie again. If you read the call for comments, and Denise may want to add to this as well or someone else, but their report did include three documents named that they were going to look at. And so it was our expectation that they would look at those three, and we've just added to the list they started.
All right, then I believe it might be necessary to call sharper attention to the fact that while staff acknowledged there were three source documents, we have come up with a dozen more relevant source documents, and maybe more explicitly call out that we recommend that staff look for abuse-related elements in all these other documents as well, just to make it a little bit firmer of an ask, and maybe that's an edit that I can provide. Denise.
Yes, I think that's a great suggestion. I had one question and then also a comment. The question is whether the I didn't have time to check into this, but if there was official BC support for the GAC safeguards, then that could be elevated into the bulleted list as well. Was that the
Denise,
case?
This is, Yeah, Denise, this is Steve. In the write-up that I did initially for this, I indicated that we supported many of the GAC safeguards in December 2014 with, quote-unquote, this letter. So that link. And then in June 2013, we went further in the second link. So I will put both of those links into the body of the comment with footnotes hyperlinking to the earlier BC comments. Would that be helpful?
Yeah, I think that would be helpful. And my expectation is that in doing this research and data gathering, that staff does look at all of the additional elements that we list there and pull out appropriate indicators for this work.
They do, but in the paragraph in the draft, it says, you may find our past public comments useful. And that link goes to our entire list of well over a couple of hundred comments.
Yeah, I included that for education purposes more than anything. This really seemed like a draft report written by someone who was relatively new to this area. But what I was referring to was the specific list of the bulleted list that we include there. And responding to your question of, yes, I would expect a researcher to actually look at all of those documents and come up with a much more fulsome list of research and sort of data metrics for this report. And then finally, because there seems to have been a fair amount of confusion about this draft report and the direction that it should go, if the BC can come to closure sooner before the extended deadline, I think it would benefit the broader community to file the BC comments sooner before the deadline, so other community groups who are interested in this topic can read them and factor that into their comments as well. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. It's not as if we're worried about staff looking at it sooner. They've got enough to do, but your point is other members of the ICANN community might agree with what we're submitting. And I think that's an idea worth pursuing. So I will make the two changes I just offered to do now right away and circulate that. Maybe I'll put it out for a last call giving, say, 3 days in the hopes that we can put this in on May the 1st. And that would give other parts of the community a chance to echo our concerns. Any objections to that plan? Okay, seeing no hands. Let me again acknowledge the work of Denise, of Angie Graves, of Olga, Andy Abrams, and Chris Wilson. Thank you very much. I only have one more. It's the CCWG accountability draft bylaws. This is item 4 on my list of the policy calendar, and it is referenced in the third attachment to the policy calendar, which is a document I have prepared for the leadership of the CCWG, and we will be discussing it with CCWG on our next call as we plan ahead for Workstream 2. Workstream 2 bylaws will end up being an important consideration. But this particular public comment, number 4, is about the full set of bylaws, and it's several hundred pages, and these comments will close on the 21st of May. It's the result of work between the two law firms hired by CCWG, as well as ICANN Legal, who worked off of the final approved report on CCWG transition and CWG transition for IANA to come up with a set of bylaws to implement that final report. And that was supposed to be a strictly confined exercise that didn't look at relitigating or rethinking the final report, but simply coming up with bylaws that faithfully implemented what we had in the final report. But I can tell you that on many calls, there was a significant temptation where someone wanted to sort of reopen earlier debates or reinterpret what was in the final report. We were able to resist those temptations, I think, and pretty much come up with bylaws that faithfully implement those. The timeline we've been able to meet so far has been pretty heroic, and if we keep this up and get these comments closed on the 21st, providing there are not significant fixes required by the public comment, the board of ICANN can probably adopt those bylaws a week later on the 27th of May at a meeting they've already scheduled for this purpose. And that will give us the opportunity to hand it over to NTIA, the U.S. Commerce Department, who can then evaluate whether the new bylaws are sufficient so we can get this transition implemented. So this puts ICANN and the community on track for a September 30th expiration of NTIA's IANA agreement, although there are many other factors, as Phil and many of the rest of you in Washington, D.C. are aware. There are other political factors that may or may not lead to perhaps some extension of that deadline. But let's be sure to get our work done, because politics are what politics are. So I will volunteer to draft a BC comment on those bylaws, given that it reflects a report that we in the BC approved. I don't expect these to be extensive comments at all. So at this point, I'll take hands from anyone else who'd like to assist me in that drafting or comment on this one. Phil?
Yes, Steve. First of all, I'd like to volunteer to be a backup on that drafting. I've been participating in the recent CCWG accountability calls. I reviewed the red line draft of the bylaws once. It does seem to pretty faithfully reflect what's in the final report. There haven't been any game playing, and there's only one item that's being discussed right now that I'm aware of where there's some question about whether it completely tracks it. My question, though, is I think it's pretty clear that the bylaws are accurate reflection of the report and that they're going to be completed on time to allow a transition, let's say October 1, the day that after the appropriations freeze expires and the contract expires. But there's a lot more to be done. I noticed, for example, that both the PTI, which is a new corporation that ICANN will contract with to perform the root zone functions, as well as the Empowered Community, both of them have to be established as nonprofit California public benefit corporations. Do you see there being enough time? We've got basically 5 months left to get all that other stuff done besides the bylaws that must be not just approved but implemented for the NTA to complete the transition on October 1.
Thanks, Phil. I think October 1 is eminently doable for the establishment of paperwork, establishment of corporations. It's probably not sufficient time to actually assign and hire personnel and to fully populate the policies and procedures of PTI. That is understood by Larry Strickling, who said that the determination he has to make in mid-August will have to be one that's based upon an expectation that some tasks will take a little longer. But I think that what Strickling will be looking for by mid-August, and that's when he has to decide whether to extend or to suggest that it would expire on September 30th, is as long as the paperwork is in process to establish the legal entity of PTI, there's an understanding that the rest of that implementation could take after August the 15th. I hope that answers your question, and I do appreciate your participation on those calls and volunteering to help me with this comment.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
I have just one small related matter, and I covered this at the very bottom of the report before I turn this over to Phil, Susan, and Cheryl. But with respect to this IANA transition and ICANN accountability, Workstream 2 items, there are 9 significant items, and 6 of them overlap very tightly with what would be covered in the next Accountability and Transparency Review Team, or ATRT3. So I had been assigned by leadership of CCWG to lay out a case for whether we should hand off the ATRT3 in January of 2017, or should CCWG take an extra year to do the work of 6 of these Workstream 2 items and defer the beginning of ATRT3 until January of 2018. I did the research to determine that our new bylaws would allow that, because our bylaws say 5 years between reviews, whereas the AOC had 3 years. And so far, anyone I've checked with is on board with the idea that CCWG has a greater amount of power to force the board to implement changes than the ATRT would. And therefore, we would like to get as much of the work stream two items done by the CCWG under those bylaw powers, rather than handing them to an ATRT that wouldn't have the same level of power. So my notes on the policy calendar, as well as the third attachment to the policy calendar, lay out the case that I've been trying to make, and I'd be grateful for feedback from BC members about whether that's a plan you think we should pursue, and I'll take a cue on that. Go ahead, Denise.
Sounds reasonable to me. Thanks.
Thank you. And Susan?
So, and I have no issue with, I think that sounds, as Denise said, reasonable and a good plan. But this does bring up the other ALC reviews, which there's getting to be quite a discussion on different threads. One is the SSR review. Now, that hasn't had as much discussion, but there's definitely a lot of pushback on the WHOIS review that should have been implemented, you know, started already, and now is maybe late fall 2017, somewhere in there. People are saying that we should, you know, and using the CCWG bylaws to say, oh, we have more time, which is sort of true.
Not really. CCWG bylaws say 5 years between reviews, and we'll already be late.
Right.
On that,
because exactly.
by our calculation, when was the beginning of the previous WHOIS review, Susan?
We delivered the report in 2012. That's when we delivered
right.
the report.
Okay.
So, and there's definitely a growing dynamic to say that the RDF working group has to be completed before a WHOIS review team is seated. And so I think the, along with your, you know, the issue on ATRT, that the BC should definitely develop a stance on that and be proactive in asserting that, what we want, because there's quite a few different stakeholder groups that are saying, absolutely not, this should wait for 12 months after the RDS is done. The RDS isn't going to be done for maybe
years.
4 years. Yeah.
Agreed.
So I don't, and I think, you know, the WHOIS review team is looking back to see what has been done over the last few years and has the original recommendation, have those been implemented. So I think we need to develop a position for the ATRT. We also need to do that for the WHOIS review team and the SSR and be very public about it. I'm not sure how, but.
Okay. All right, Susan, that's a great point. It doesn't exactly dovetail with this particular one. What I was getting at here is that of the 9 items in Workstream 2, 6 of them fit neatly into ATRT. And rather than let ATRT start and take them over, we want to delay ATRT because we can, in order for CCWG to finish the 6. None of those 9 items have anything to do with WHOIS. So the WHOIS mm-hmm. discussion has come up on the call, and you'll be quite amazed. I guess it was yesterday. There was an acknowledgement, Alan Greenberg, I think, brought it up, that we are already late on the next WHOIS review. If you follow the timeline of the affirmation of commitments, we're already late.
Right.
The point that was brought up is that with the bylaws that we've recommended for CCWG, there's a 5-year interval between reviews. And once we put those bylaws in this year, we're immediately going to be late on WHOIS because we didn't start it this year. So there was actually a call to say, let's have a transitional paragraph in the bylaws suggesting that there could be more time to start the WHOIS review. I could understand doing that so that it doesn't look as if we've implemented bylaws that we are already in violation. I could get that, although it didn't really bother me very much on the call. I'm afraid, however, that some will use that transitional bylaw to create even more delay for the beginning of the next WHOIS review. So Phil and I have been very
exactly.
keen on these calls, and we will take your advice And if there is any transitional language, to avoid saying that we are already in violation of the bylaws, we won't allow that to turn into an excuse for further delay. I take your point that we want to start the WHOIS review within the next few months, not to wait for after the RDAP, not to wait until the RDS is done.
Correct.
Do I have that right? Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Denise?
Yeah, just so I think to draw a finer point on this, and the relevancy here is in acknowledging that there's a very unique situation with the CCWG accountability and transition work and such a strong overlap with the ATRT scope that it's appropriate in this case to delay. But, you know, we think that in doing that, it would also be appropriate to lay out a sort of BC position and have some leadership here in ensuring that this is seen as a unique delay and articulate what the BC would like to see in terms of the review schedule coming up. I think that would help allay some suggestions that a WHOIS review only be kicked off after the RDS is done,
yeah,
or that we ignore that the SSR review needs to start. I think rather than wait for staff to suggest something that, you know, the BC could potentially have some leadership here and perhaps come up with a statement that articulates our understanding and desire in ensuring that some of, you know, the timing of some of these reviews and their scope and so forth. Thanks.
Got it. And the way I had articulated it with the third attachment is we're not trying to create some excuse for delaying ATRT 3, but suggesting that the six Workstream 2 accountability items would be much more powerfully implemented if the CCWG kept them rather than hand them off to ATRT 3. So you're right. We're not going to try to make it seem as if we're making a case for delay. Because, in fact, you know, the bylaws would accommodate starting ATRT 3 in 2018. The bylaws is probably not the place where the BC would take this position on starting the WHOIS review and SSR, but it's a position we can develop so that we can use it at council meetings where it's discussed, and if, in fact, a public comment were to come up. But I agree with you. Any other comments?
I'll draft something just so we have an opportunity to get on the same page about the reviews in general, and in case we find it useful in the future. I think we, in particular, wanted to forestall any suggestion that because we're supporting a delay in ATRT 3, we would want to push all of the reviews out quite a ways, and I don't, and that's certainly not the case with Facebook, and I don't
know. I have an idea then. In the comment we're submitting on the new bylaws, okay, that's a great opportunity, the one that Phil Corbin is going to help me with. I'm going to add you to help on that, because that's a great opportunity for the BC to recognize that the bylaws accommodate to the ATRT in 2018 and that we support that, but to reiterate our concern that the WHOIS review should begin as soon as possible and not wait in the SSR review. So why don't we add that to our comments on the draft bylaws, since it'll be a great place to focus it on.
Sure.
Okay, Denise, so I'll add you and Phil to help me with that.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, there's nothing else for me there. So, Chris, I wanted to turn it back over to you and to our counselors on Channel 2, discussion at GNSO Council.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Phil and Susan, why don't we go turn it to you and hear what's going on with GNSO Council. I know you all had your meeting a couple weeks ago after the BC members meeting, so we'd love for an update there and then what we can expect going forward.
Sure. This is Phil. I'd be glad to start off and have Susan chime in if that's okay with her.
Yep, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, the last council meeting was on April 14th. It was a little bit after our BC call, so we were able to discuss the issues right before we went into that council meeting and get very near-term feedback. The next council meeting is on May 12th, which is 2 weeks from today. It's probably another day we're going to have a BC meeting, but the council meeting takes place at 1200 UTC, which is 8 a.m. East Coast time and 5 a.m. Sorry, Susan, Pacific time. So it's going to be before the BC meeting. So we'll interact with the BC just prior to that to get any guidance we need on issues coming up. The document filing deadline for motions and other documents is this coming Monday, May 12th. At the April meeting, we took we approved three items by votes. One was the approval of our the council's proposed approach for implementing recommendations from the GNSO review. The second vote was on approving the procedures for governing the selection of a GNSO liaison to the GAC. And I know staff was going to be sending out a notice to the constituencies and stakeholder groups. I'm not sure if that's gone out yet, but if any BC member has an interest in that position, we're going to need someone good on that. Mason Cole from Donuts and the Registry Stakeholder Group has been doing it the last 2 years. I had worked with him quite a bit in my role as co-chair of the working group on IGO rights processes. And it's an important job. It's not an easy job. It requires being in the GAC meetings at ICANN meetings and developing a relationship with the GAC and trying to help bring them along in integrating the GAC into the policy process in a more timely way, which is going to be even more important as we go to the new post-transition system. And so again, if any BC member has an interest in that role, there's an opportunity to volunteer and put your name forward. The final vote was to approve the input to the ICANN board on the GAC Marrakesh communique. And let me stop there, see if there are any questions on council action at the April meeting. And I don't if see any.
If there's not questions, I have a couple of comments. This is Susan.
Sure.
So on the GAC liaison, one of the things we had advocated for was rotating the position, but we didn't win that battle. I do think it's important that it not always be a registrar, and, you know, we've only had one of these, so we don't have a pattern of that. But I think different viewpoints from the community in general would be good for the GAC to, you know, someone with different viewpoints would be good for the GAC to interact with. And I think the BC probably has more issues aligned with the GAC sometimes than the registrars or registries. So, you know, if we did have a candidate to put forward, that would be great. So I agree with Phil on that to urge people. The other thing is we did approve the recommendations from the GNSO review, but there was three recommendations that were not recommended to go forward that to be implemented, and one of which was to look at the structure of the GNSO in general. And as you know, we all struggle with, you know, being part of the CSG and not having a complete voice of our own. And so that was one of the do not implement, and it was categorized in red, and they changed that to make sure that there's some understanding that at this time, maybe in the GNSO review, we should not move forward with restructuring the GNSO. But that doesn't mean that there's no interest or agreement that there are issues and that we should think about that in the future. Because I was concerned that down the way somebody would go, oh, the whole GNSO agreed. Look, it's in red. We should never talk about that subject. So we did get that changed in the record.
Okay. Thank you for adding that detail, Susan. The one other item I wanted to bring up is the planning for the Helsinki meeting. I've sent to the BC list. There have been two tentative schedules so far. The latest one was earlier this week. To briefly review what's going on, you all have that Excel spreadsheet. I don't know if we have that to put up in the chat room, but the way it's structured now, there will be a meeting of the CCWG accountability on Sunday afternoon, as I understand it, Steve. Is that correct?
Yes, Bill.
Right. And that's the only meeting that's taking place outside the four-day window. ICANN staff was quite resistant to any and all other requests to schedule meetings outside the four-day window. The GNSO schedule at this point in time is on Monday to in the first part of the day to have council meet and discuss quite a number of issues, and then in the afternoon, early afternoon, a meeting of the working group I co-chair on IGO curative rights processes, and I'm happy to report that we finally gotten a final draft report from our legal expert on sovereign immunity of IGOs, and I don't know if we can complete our work in Helsinki, but we expect to move forward quickly now. The afternoon, mid-afternoon to late, is for cross-community discussions. Interestingly, the board's schedule for this and most days is participation in SOAC, SG, and policy development work, so I guess that means the board members are going to be spreading out and sitting in on GNSO meetings and ALAC meetings. And the second day, all morning is taken up by the working group on next generation registry data services that Susan's involved with, and then the afternoon session is going to be on cross-community working group of the auction, the last resort auction proceedings, and then late in the day again, concluding with cross-community discussions. On Wednesday, there's going to be GNSO Council bilateral meeting requests. I'm not sure what that means, but that's what's on the schedule. And then the rest of the day will be a meeting of the subsequent procedures working group, which is looking at whether there'll be a round two of new TLDs and what, if any, changes should be made in the applicant guidebook other than the rights protection mechanisms. Again, the day ends with cross-community discussions, and then there's a council prep session late in the day from 6 to 8 p.m. On the final day, the morning is taken up with an hour-and-a-half meeting of the new working group on rights protection mechanisms, and while it won't be official till Monday, there's a trifecta or troika co-chair arrangement there where two of the three co-chairs will be from the BC. One is myself, one is J. Scott Evans, and the third co-chair will be Kathy Kleiman from the NC SG. In the late morning, there's a council meeting, then there's a council wrap-up session, and then there's cross-community discussions. Now, you'll note in that schedule there's no slots for stakeholder constituency meetings, and quite a few have asked for time to do that. So I think there'll be further adjustments in the schedule. But that's where we stand now. My personal reaction is that it's going to be a very busy meeting and very focused and hardworking on policy issues. It'll be quite different from the ICANN meetings we're used to. So I'll stop there. That's the last item I have on council report and see if there's any comments. I see Denise has her hand up. Go ahead, Denise.
Yeah, clearly I had too much coffee this morning. Just a couple quick comments looking at the first day. It would be great if the I think it would be really useful to have full cross-community groups discussing, key shared topics. It would be great if the CCNSO could suspend Tech Day for an hour and a half to join the rest of the community on Monday. And then also, I think it would be useful if instead of staff opening the session on Monday morning, we had the chairs of the SOs and ACs opening the session and give each of them an opportunity to highlight what they see as critical issues they would like the rest of the community to join them in throughout the few days. And then finally, I'm a little amazed and happy that the GAC has so early in the process provided such detail to all of their schedules. They're kind of showing us up, and it would be great to have similar detail on the GNSO council and the GNSO schedule as well. I think it's really shaping up to be a very productive meeting. Thanks.
Thanks for those comments, Denise. And as I said, I think it's going to be a very hardworking, productive meeting as well. I took down notes on your comments, and we can convey them back to Council as we provide further feedback and further develop the schedule.
Bill, this is Chris, and maybe if I could take the time, maybe do a,
sure.
a straw poll for folks that are on the call right now. Who knows for sure that they will be attending meeting B? I know it's 2 months out, but if you know you're going to attend, could you maybe put a green check mark by your name?
Hey Chris, it's Laura Covington. I'm not on the Adobe, but I'll be there. So.
Great. Thanks. I see we've got two, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine people from the BC at least that are participating in today's call, acknowledging they'll be there. So I was just curious just to get a sense of BC participation and engagement, and that's helpful. So thank you very much, everybody, for doing that. Any Andrew Mack, I see your hand is raised.
No.
Okay.
Sorry, not intentional.
Okay. Well, I think that's all we have on council, so we can move on to Channel 3.
Great. Thank you, Phil. Cheryl cannot be on the call today, so I will just quickly substitute for her with regard to CSG activity. Steve, you can see in the calendar, Steve has mentioned some of the work that's already been discussed with regard to IANA transition and ICANN accountability. I will see in the agenda I added, there will be a call on May 9th. The CSG will be doing a call on May 9th with ICANN staff, in particular discussing the all book comments submitted regarding the budget, ICANN's budget. So it'll be a joint call with the ISP. CP, the IPC, and the BC to sort of orally present our comments, if you will, provide further clarity on our comments to pertinent staff. We're going to those that will participate will be BCXCOM, and then those BC members who volunteered to draft the comments with regard to the budget. So we can certainly report back to folks on that, what was discussed, but there'll be a joint CSG call on May 9th, the morning of May 9th, to discuss budget comments. Further to CSG discussion, and actually I think sort of dovetails with a little bit of an email thread we had, if not this week, last week, on BC planning and CSG planning for meeting B. As folks know, as Phil discussed in the calendar, there's no constituency day for this meeting. Obviously, a lot of activities revolve specifically around the policy, PDP work, and so forth. So the question is, to what extent, if any, should the CSG do collective activities during the meeting B, and of course, to what extent constituencies should be doing their own meetings. And some discussion came up of whether or not we should do another CSG GAC breakfast, as we did in Marrakesh, in Helsinki. And while my initial inclination was to perhaps not do that for meeting B and then perhaps just wait till meeting C, I know others within the CSG leadership are interested perhaps in doing a breakfast during meeting B. So it may be that we'll soon be planning a CSG GAC breakfast in Helsinki for one of those mornings. And we'll hopefully get more information on that. Outside of that, I don't think we'll have any planned CSG activities for meeting B. It may be that we reserve the right to sort of have a CSG meeting if we think that there's need for collective input into some of the working group activity going on during those 4 days. And so we may do maybe an ad hoc meeting at some point. But as of now, I don't think we're intending to schedule a formal CSG meeting during meeting B. But that may change. But as of now, that's not the case. And in light of the fact that the board is not scheduling to meet with the CSG as they usually do during meeting B, I don't think we'll have a board CSG interaction. A formal board CSG interaction during meeting B either. But welcome comments on that if folks have interest in that. And I see, Phil, I see you made a comment regarding the GAC breakfast. I think that goes without saying we would certainly do it earlier rather than later because of what's going on. Maybe that we do a 7:30 breakfast. Give folks a chance to do that, and then go off and do their work beginning at 8:30. But that's a good point, Phil, and we'll discuss that. Other thoughts? I see Barbara, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, thanks so much, Chris. I was just wondering if you had any further information concerning meeting C. Have they narrowed their decision for venues?
So as far as their venues, I think they're only down to three venues as far as options. I don't believe they formally have announced, and I certainly haven't heard a formal announcement that they will be moving meeting C. As I mentioned before, Las Vegas is the leading candidate for the alternative venue, which would be a week before the meeting is currently scheduled. It would take place a week earlier than scheduled. But I have not seen any official announcement on that. I don't know if the last board meeting, I don't think it was actually on the agenda, which I thought it was going to be. It doesn't seem to be on the agenda. It was not on the agenda. So as of now, I have no new news on that. If others have heard something else, please let us know. But as of now, we're still scheduled to go to San Juan, but I do think we'll get a note. We'll learn soon that that's not going to be the case. Okay, anything else on that? Any questions or concerns on what I just said? Phil?
Yeah, Chris, I noted the other day they've put up a revised meeting schedule, and it lists the locations of the meetings in 2017, but for the C meeting in 2016, San Juan is no longer listed. So it looks like we're not going to San Juan based on that, but they haven't met yet and decided where we are going.
Great. Thank you, Phil. Okay. So maybe perhaps I'll go ahead and turn to Jimson for his update. Jimson, you available?
Oh, yes, Chris, and everyone, greetings. On finance, I did send the first draft FY17 budget to the list. So I'd like to encourage our members to take a very close look and provide input, especially in the area of the expense level. We're projecting that in FY17, we'll do more outreaches across continents. Like Latin America, Eastern Europe, in Asia, and of course Africa. So, there was a graph provided to put out that coordinate for us to do more outreaches. So, I want to thank the Finance Committee, Chris Chaplow, and the Gray, and of course Mary Lee, and the Outreach Committee as well for their inputs to this draft FY17 budget proposal. It's still a work in progress. We still have till June 30th for it to be covered. So we have some members that have been processed, new membership that have been processed. So funds will still come in. And so we'll keep updating the data we have there until June 30th. Yeah, with respect to operations, the Data Council, as we reported last time, agreed on the clause proposition. We proposed that the indemnification will only cover the General Counsel, and all the other officers will not be covered. And to take care of the indemnification, we buy insurance to take care of that. And the cost of insurance is between $450 to $700 per annum. So we're still working on the paperwork. So, well, from the ESCOM, yeah, there's no objection to the clause, and also I wish to request no objections from members concerning this. So if there's no objection, then we'll go ahead to finalize the entire process. So that's the clause there, still on the screen. So, as I said, please take a look at it closely. I also want to thank the Charter Committee, the Charter Group. They've been working very, very hard, and they've gone ahead to provide a kind of preview of the Charter. So even with this incorporated, finally there's no objection. So I want to thank the Charter Committee for their hard work on the new Charter. Then lastly, I'll just talk about the member cliques. As you could recall, we have this application that we're onboarding now that could help us more with membership management. Each member can update their profile. Don't need to contact the secretariat to change those that we are available.
Did we lose Jimson?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, my telephone got cut off, so I'm switching to Adobe Room. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So on the last part, talking about the member cliques, we in the next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll be finalizing this the migration to the platform. And I want to encourage members to visit the new website. It is cbu.membersclique.net. Maybe, if possible, okay, Chantek will type it on the Adobe chat room. The new BC website with member clicks, cbu.membersclique.net. So, but once we finalize the migration, then we'll configure this URL. Once we we'll reconfigure it to be our original web URL name, that is www.discost.org. So, and with all our email, customized email intact. So, the next, as I said, the next 3 weeks should be true. And by that time, we'll be ready to also send invoices to our members. So we're targeting that by end of May, we'll be able to send invoices around for all members to work on. So thank you so far from my side. Chris, back to you. Chris, any questions?
Thank you, Jimson, for that. I know Steve Coates mentioned in the chat room, I should say your audio is much better when you're speaking with through Adobe Audio, for what it's worth, rather than the phone. If FYI, in the future, if you can use Adobe Audio.
Oh, okay. That's good.
But thank you, Jimson, for that update.
Okay.
So
that's good to know.
Let me just quickly say, next meeting will be Thursday, May 12th, 2 weeks from today, same time. And then lastly, for those that maybe aren't in Washington or in tune with what was going on, there's been a change. The U.S. GAC rep has been Suzanne Riddell for at least the last 10 years. She's transitioning to a new role within the Department of Commerce. So someone will be replacing her as the GAC rep. His name is Chris Hemmerlein. Chris is relatively new to the ICANN space. He'd been doing more other ITU work and other internet governance work within NTIA, Department of Commerce. So he's now, but he will now be the full-time GAC rep for the U.S. government. And so for those that are in Washington who haven't yet met Chris, I encourage you to try to do so. He's a great person and will be a great U.S. government representative on the GAC for the U.S. So I just wanted to announce that for folks that may not have already heard or known. So, and for those that will be in Helsinki, I also recommend you going up and introducing yourself to him. He's anxious to hear from U.S. businesses especially and learn more about what their interests are and how he can be helpful as a U.S. government rep. So any other thoughts, concerns, questions from folks? Terrific. Okay, well, everybody, thank you very much. XCOM will do our call momentarily. Everyone else, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. And stop recording.
Thank you, everyone. Operator, you may now stop the recording.
Thanks.